Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And it's time for a podcast. We are talking to one of my favorite boss girls in the industry, Shauna Chrisman. She is amazing. And I met her at a women's conference earlier this year. I was just so impressed with how vivacious you are and how motivating you were and down to earth and realistic on top of everything. She founded Destination Aesthetics, one of the top five Allergan accounts in the country, and has built a really amazing, successful practice. But my goals today were to talk about injector life and how to survive this process of building and growing. So welcome, Shauna.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here. And I admire you so much and have gotten so many pearls from you as well since we've met, especially, but followed you before. So I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, that's so awesome. I love the sign that's behind her desk that says just a girl building an empire, because I feel like that's exactly right. I feel the same way. And I think aesthetics is it's a beautiful industry to get into as a woman. What do you think are the hard parts about it that have made our, journey difficult?
Oh my gosh. I mean, being a woman alone is challenging, I think. You know, we have the stereotypical roles of the household. We are the bearer of children. We have hormones that fluctuate erratically every month. And then we have a job. And the job in aesthetics is so fun and exhilarating, yet also so demanding. And I think the culture is now that people have to do better, to scale, to be a KOL injector, to be a podium speaker, to manage the household, all of those things. So I think balance is really tough for women right now in the field of aesthetics. And I appreciate people talking about this more, about the transparency. In fact, Rana just, Kelly just posted today about, what you see on Instagram is not always, what it's chalked up to be, and a lot of filtered lives and a lot of filtered faces and all of these things. And like, let's just keep it real, people, and just support each other. I think that's the commonality that we have right now as women in the field of aesthetics.
Tell us a little bit about your journey in building Destination Aesthetics, because you are a nurse practitioner. You started out in pulmonary kind of critical care medicine. You trained at UC San Francisco. Is that right?
UCSF,
UCSF, which is a great training program, but very intense. And then how did you build Destination Aesthetics?
It was completely on a whim. I was kind of soul searching without knowing I was soul searching. I'm just going to be honest, I didn't have a passion for aesthetics. I thought it was kind of a means for me to do something flexible on the side. And I just started doing what is so cringe now, but I started doing Botox parties as kind of a way to maybe have another revenue stream for our family, where I could maybe taper off on taking call in the hospital and working weekends. And it really wasn't until I started realizing the power that we have in practicing medicine with our hands in a very alternative way, and the impact that we have on people. It wasn't until then that I realized that aesthetics was my passion, but I didn't go into it as it being primarily a passion project. It was something that I was exploring just to have, I guess, better balance in my own life back then. And I actually ended up doing the exact opposite. It created this unintentional demand professionally and personally and all of these things. And it actually became the opposite of what I was looking for, but for all good reasons. At the time I was working as a nurse practitioner in acute care, in pulmonary critical care and ICUs, and also at Kaiser one day a week. And I also owned and operated a residential board and care facility for the elderly. My husband was about to leave me because he's just like, what are you doing? I didn't sign up for this. I'm like, I know, I don't know what I'm doing. But it ended up being obviously my primary job ultimately. And so I kind of shaved down all my other jobs until Destination Aesthetics, became my primary number one. And then it just kind of grew organically from there with no intention of it being a 5-location destination. But I started doing Botox parties in the evenings, and it's exactly what we don't like to do in our industry now, but that's honestly where I got the name Destination Aesthetics. That's the origin of how it started.
That's amazing. I think that it's still kind of a truism in our industry right now that you You have to have multiple baskets that you're juggling a lot of balls at once. It's probably best actually that you come into aesthetics and you have a regular steady revenue income, and then you start doing little things on the side to build your skill set. Like it would be very challenging to just drop everything, open a door, open an office, and like put your shingle out and expect to be busy. So I think that's the strategy almost everybody uses getting into aesthetics. They have a regular, strong revenue stream, and then they build a side hustle. I did that too. I did a lot of head and neck surgery and facial plastic surgery, but more like trauma, reconstructive, cancer, and then started to realize that I really wanted something that was more elective and beautifying and artistic. And yeah, it's
It's so interesting how everyone's path is different, but yet semi-similar. But I agree that it's definitely smarter to have that financial backing and getting into something as it grows. So yeah, it's
It really
easier
is.
to sleep at
Can you share with us some of your thoughts about how to stay ahead of all the rapid trends in aesthetics right now? Because just like you said, like the fear of missing out is it's always going to nag at you. Whether it's like, oh my God, our office doesn't have, this and that laser, or we need to be doing this treatment that everybody else is doing. I need to learn how to do liquid rhinos, even though
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the anatomy of the nose. I'm not too comfortable with basics, but I'm going to learn big, difficult things. How do you stop the
Yeah.
FOMO?
That is a great question. And I think everyone does have a lot of FOMO as to being a top injector or a master injector, whatever that definition means. There really is no definition of a master injector. Having the best and the latest and greatest tools in the tool chest. I think that what people lack is just focusing on the basics, and getting the basics done well first. You have to have a foundation for your business, whether it's lasers, whether it's injectables. And if you try to do everything at the same time, it's probably not going to work out in the best interest. Our practice was heavily focused on injectables. We just didn't have anyone who was super passionate about doing lasers, including myself. And so we were just really passionate about injectables. So that was always 80% of our revenue year after year. But, pros and cons on what you want your primary platform to be, but that's what we chose. And we really heavily specialized on that. So I think, as devices are expensive. The average revenue you need to produce just to pay off the warranty every month is usually a minimum of $1,000. So it gets to be an expensive overhead cost. And so I think people just need to figure out what your niche is going to be and just crush it and do that really well, provide an amazing patient experience and provide amazing consistent outcomes and treat your patients as if they are family because they are serving you as your bread and butter and your livelihood. And if you want to grow your business, those are the three most important things: outcome, experience, and the way that you treat people, your patients.
I think most certainly. I think you and I are both a little bit old school because, like, I'm the kind of person that gives people my cell phone number. I reach out after hours. I squeeze people in. I like a classic woman, I kill myself to please people. And yet, that is the business model that actually works the best is when you show how much you care and you give it your
Absolutely.
all. And, like, it's almost like if you don't give it your all, like, is your business going to really make it? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Showing people that you care is literally number one in everything, whether it's, business management and patient relations and all of those things. I mean, you can, hit someone in the wrong muscle with neurotoxin and cause them to have an asymmetric smile. But if you show compassion that you truly are sorry and you're going to do everything you can to try to make it right, then they will come back to you, most likely, hopefully. But yeah, that's a big
Yeah,
point.
definitely. Now, we talk a lot about balance. And in fact, at this AmSpa Wounds conference we went to, there was a speaker who said, balance is bullshit. And that really
That was
resonated
me.
with me. Yes. We feel, I think, strongly that balance is bullshit. How have you dealt with that feeling of overwhelm when it's hard to balance and hard to juggle all the balls?
It's a great question too. I think this is the number one thing that women and just everyone just struggles with. Because if you work too much, you feel like you're neglecting your family and friends and fur babies. And if you're the opposite, then you're missing out on that entrepreneurship or business mindset or just, the feedback that you get from just being with people. So I kind of describe balance as this, as you have a scale, you have 5 pounds on this side, 5 pounds on that side. Like that is the definition of balance. Well, we all know that life is not balance and your day to day is never balance. So I think that you just have to have the mindset of trying your best at all times. Give yourself its own self-love, self-care, whatever that looks like. It could be reading a book, taking a bath, getting your nails done, whatever. And giving yourself that space and grace, because I always revert back to the analogy that we all hear about, which is give yourself oxygen first. You know, if the plane's going down, you got to give yourself oxygen first before you help others. And we can't help anyone around us or our environment or our mental health if we don't serve ourselves first. And so it's difficult. But, you know, what I see right now are so many people focusing on their career, which is something I 100% did myself. But if you're going to give 25% more to your career, your business, or whatever it is, you have to pull back 25% from another bucket. So I think you just really have to look at where that bucket's going to come from and what are the implications of that bucket. And one of the things that I am just
Mostly,
obsessed with.
it mostly never comes from taking 25% from your kids or from your husband. So, it's going to come from neglecting yourself 25%, sadly, is what mostly happens, right?
I agree. You know, you're going to go to bed 25% later. You're going to have 25% less sleep, or even if it's 20% less sleep, I'm not sure. But, you know, one of the things that I am obsessed with right now, and I want to do more research, is affective forecasting. And I was listening to a podcast, and basically it talked about how humans are historically and scientifically proven to be terrible forecasters of what we're working so hard for today, on what we feel we need and want in the future, what's going to feed us, whether it's financially, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all of these things. And we're terrible predictors. So I think you could imagine, like, 2, 5, 10 years ago, if you were planning at that point, and then you're looking at your life now, it's like, oh wow, I never thought that this would have happened, or I never thought I would have needed, or I never thought of, you know, all of these things. And so we're working so hard right now for what we forecast we need in the next 2 to 5 to 10 years, but it's most likely going to be off, whether it's a little bit or a lot, whether it's your partner, whether it's your work, whether it's, you know, what feeds you at that point. You might need more emotional feeding, you might need more financial feeding. It's just all so interesting to me.
So it's called affective. What's the word?
Affective, yeah, AFF, affective forecasting.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Your brain tends to, well, I mean, does that go along with manifesting? Because like you might manifest a journey and a destination that's crazy, wild, and extravagant. Or you think
Yeah.
about it, you think about it, you envision it every day, right?
Right.
You almost have to do that where you're over predicting or
Totally.
envisioning something that your brain can't quite handle.
Yeah, I had I posted something like right before the new year, and I was manifesting instead of putting out like New Year's resolutions and all these things. And one of the first things that came to my mind was freedom. I don't know what that meant for me, other than generally speaking, the term freedom. I didn't know if that meant mental freedom, emotional freedoms, physical freedom. I have no idea. But it was just the first thing that came to my mind, and it was really interesting. So when we talk about manifesting, another thing is something that I think we all, like you said, like we're, it could, you know, fall into also effective forecasting. But I think what a lot of people misstep on it are basically manifesting the hard steps to get to that, you know, destination. Because if you are planning on scaling, or you are planning on, you know, growing your single practice or whatever it is, we have to manifest what the roadblocks may be, so we're better prepared to deal with those in the moment. Otherwise, we're going to hit those and we're going to fall, and then we're going to feel helpless and not supported and kind of an oh crap, like what do I do now type situation. Those are the kind of things that we need to manifest and think big dreams. But what are some potential roadblocks and things that could happen to prevent me from getting there in a linear fashion? Because otherwise, it's just going to be frustrating and sad, and we're going to get angry. And we've all felt that way, and it's okay to feel that way. But I feel like so many people look at the end goal without realizing, you know, what's in between, because it's not all roses and pretty, you know?
Oh yeah, there's lots of vinegar and acid along the way. All roses and beautiful fragrances. But I think that's so interesting. Like, you literally only visualize a successful pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yes.
How often do you think of all the trenches you'll have to dig out from?
Yeah, and it's hard to predict those. But I think the beauty of our community is that there are so many people now who have done X. So, you know, mentorship, and I think there is so much more education now, not just about being a great injector and a safe injector, but about business and scaling. And there are so many playbooks out there now and advisors. So use those and reach out to people and gain those mentorships, because it's a hard journey. I mean, life is a hard journey, let alone trying to be successful and, you know, and look good doing it. I mean, it's hard.
What are some of the tools you've used? You said there are some really great business tools out there. Are there any that come to mind?
I'm a big person. I listen to podcasts. In fact, I'm trying to commit to doing like 2 to 3 a week. So when I'm getting ready every morning, I try to listen to something, and I've gained a lot of nuggets just from that alone. But, you know, going to conferences and really networking with people. Someone just told me that the number one take home that people want when they go to a conference is networking and education. So I think you can get a lot of insight from just talking to people and having a conversation, you know, whether that even be virtual, but being connected with someone who is going to give you the honest truth about things. You know, when, after I had a baby, I was like, oh my God, like, how do we not all have PTSD from this process? I mean, it's beautiful in the end, but good God, like, it's just, why did Eve have to eat that apple? Like, women have that baby. So like, afterwards, I was just telling people, okay, this is what happens to your body. This is what this feels like. This is what this feels. I'm like, I am so honest about it, not to scare people, but I'm hoping that overly preparing them will hopefully help them in the future. And that's what my goal is right now, because I did grow, you know, a location from a single room. My medical director, when I first started Destination, was doing medicinal marijuana consults. He wasn't in the field of aesthetics at all.
Wow, okay.
And I mean, my humble beginnings are so cringeworthy that I'm trying just to show people that, hey, you're starting off on the right foot with X, Y, and Z. Like, you are 100 steps you know, ahead of where I started. So yeah, let's do this. Let's make this magic happen. You know, it's, the process is daunting, but definitely achievable.
Yeah, I think that's so important. It literally takes 10 years to be an overnight success. Like, I think you definitely are a great example of that. And people don't understand the hard blood, sweat, work, and tears that go into building into this. And it does look very Instagrammy perfect on the outside. Still, there's every single day things that unravel at the office and things that you have to like dig through and fix.
Yeah, I know. We all say we need a reality TV show for like BTS, behind the scenes of what happens at Destination Aesthetics. It's like, you know, if you can just look back and laugh at 99% of it, then you're ahead. You're winning.
Exactly. In terms of like running a business, for me, some of the hard parts are, of course, like, I never went into this wanting to be an HR staffing expert. So it's been very hard to learn how to engage with young, you know, millennial staff, and just kind of how to create a work ethic that's like probably yours and mine. Like, I'm Asian, Indian, grew up in this kind of family culture of like, we are kind of raised differently than they are in the US. I think that the work culture is been a big thing. I'm really fortunate to have such dedicated staff, but how do you deal with younger employees, people not maybe giving it 100%? What are the staffing things that come up in this behind the scenes crazy world we live in?
Hard conversations, a lot of trying my best to lead, for example. You know, I tell my managers, like, if you want your team to be on time, then you need to be on time. I need to be on time. You know, those types of things, leading by example, because otherwise they're not going to learn. You know, otherwise. And so it's hard for me sometimes, you know, when I see, I don't know, I don't want to get nitpicky, but it's a different type of grind. There's, I think, sometimes a different form of entitlement that they feel. And I mean, I kind of see it in my own kids, and I try my best to like knock them down a little bit. Like, they're on pretty tight budgets because they need to learn what it feels like to eat top ramen sometimes when you don't have any money at the end of the month. I mean, that was me. So, you know, it's hard. And like you said, I'd say the biggest challenge of owning a business is managing people. And I think the number one thing that I learned that I try to implement is are good SOPs and good policies and procedures and standardized, you know, operations. Because I always tell my managers and tell the team, it's like, we want to manage systems and not people. No one wants to be micromanaged. That's the worst thing that you could probably do to somebody. And I do it sometimes because I'm trying to oversee a lot of things, but then I try to catch myself and say, instead of me checking in on this, what could I implement? Whether it's a reminder system, you know, we use Monday now as a project management tool. And I love Monday because you can set up automations. And so it can alert the person without me inquiring myself. So it saved time. And I know you're an AI expert, and I loved hearing your talk on Octane because you are working smarter, not harder. And that is how we have to implement operations as well, not just, you know, marketing and things like that. That's great. But, you know, implementing some type of automations and AI and operations is going to save us time and that oversight, because it's the system, it's the computer that's notifying the people if something's not done on time, and it's not me.
I think that's going to be life-changing to like integrate that into what we do medically speaking, but there's so little integrations between all the softwares that we use. That's the big problem, I think. So I don't know if you have any advice on spa software, med spa software, what you think has really worked for you guys.
Well, we use Zenoti as our CRM and EMR.
How do you spell that?
Zenoti, Zenoti. And okay. We were one of the early adopters. We started Zenoti in 2018 when it was kind of a startup. And their big vision is something that we bought into, obviously. And I'd say now it's a very robust system as to what they had promised in 2018. But they've done a lot of growth. And what I love about it is that they're constantly adding upgrades and evolving their platform. So, but to be honest with you, I don't know any other difference because we used Dr. Chrono, which was our original EMR. But, you know, there are a lot of great ones out there. There's nothing perfect. Otherwise, we'd all be using it. But that's what we use. And then Monday.com for project management. We use Slack at our office for intercommunication and things like that. And so those are kind of the big, you know, software programs that we use.
Awesome. What's your favorite app on your iPhone? Are you a Android user? No, you can't be. Are you?
No. Oh my gosh. No, but I know people who have Androids, and when they show me their phone, I'm like, that's cool. And their cameras are kind of
better.
Yeah, they're better. My favorite app. Oh my gosh. That is a really good
first app when you open your phone every morning is.
I mean, I hate to say it. It's Instagram.
That's okay. I'll allow it. On certain days I do that
but
too.
I don't know why. But no, the first thing I look at is my calendar, and I go through and I set alarms for all of my meetings and things that I have to tune into. So that's the first thing that I do. But I don't know. I use a lot of, I guess Slack is something that I use every day. It's so boring, but one of the tools that Zenoti has is called Pulse, and it's an app that you get basically KPIs, you know, at the end of the day. So I look at those at the end of the day. I mean, that's the nerd business person in me, I guess you could say. But
I think that's so critical. And I don't think hardly any of us look at KPIs on a daily basis. What are the key performance indicators that spa owners should be thinking of looking at least a couple times a week?
Yeah. I mean, we have 5 locations. So I look at basically the daily sales. I look at the percentage of retail sales to total sales. I look at average invoice. I look at who's selling what, because it breaks it down by provider as to how much revenue they produce in packages, memberships, retail. So it gives Zenoti gives you a daily report that I can look at, but also the Pulse app. allows me to look at how much revenue was produced by location, and then where we're at month to date, year to date, and then how much we produced in collections that day. So that's what I look at. And it doesn't take very long to screen through those, but it gives you a consistent good idea on how your business is performing on a daily level. And then overall, you can kind of do the math if you were making predictions or, you know, business planning. So
amazing. I think that's great. It's almost like the vital signs of your business that you have to check every day. So it's appropriate that it's called Pulse.
Yeah, that's true.
Like those are the critical vital signs. So this year you've had a big project where you had private equity come in and analyze your practice and buy out your entire practice. So it's like, yay, congratulations. Was that like another childbirth PTSD experience? Or has it been smooth?
Yes. It absolutely, if you could have, you know, on one hand, that was by far one of the most emotionally traumatizing, not necessarily traumatizing in a bad way, but just I'd say impression wise, you know, on the emotional impact that it had. So I started the process in 2022, and then we got acquired in March of 2023. So it's been almost a year now since we have partnered with Advanced Metastatic Partners. And I never thought that I would be exiting, you know, and selling the business at this soon. You know, we just celebrated 12 years of business in November. Mm-hmm. And there were just some pivotal life incidences that kind of made me inquire about acquisition. And one of those being, I found a full sibling biological sister on ancestry.com. We're both adopted from Korea.
Wow.
And I found her, and I just asked myself, it's like, I don't want to say you're maxed out like socially and just personally, but it's like when you have family, you have kids, like all you have work and all these things. And now I have this new sibling. Like I want to have time to invest in a new relationship. It's, you know, it's like kind of like investing in a marriage almost. And I just paused and I was like, how, like, I want to have time to do this intentionally to be present, right? And I just didn't see myself being able to kind of take off all of the layers to be present. So that was one of the pivotal impacts. And I had a friend unfortunately pass away in a plane accident. You know, like these are just life-changing things that happen that make you take a step aside and really look ideally externally in. So those were just two of a few other things that had happened too, but that's what kind of changed, you know, my mind at that point.
Mm-hmm.
In looking at, you know, being acquired. And so I started the process and it just all happened so fast. But it's your baby, it's your blood, sweat, and tears.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and it's you're still literally involved. You're still kind of involved with everything, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm basically doing exactly my same role, mm-hmm. Which makes me so happy. It's not, you know, Destination Aesthetics is like my baby child. And so staying with the team, staying with the patients, protecting the brand, you know, all of those things are so important. So I'm very fortunate to be able to stay on in the capacity that I am. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Amazing. So that whole manifesting freedom has actually happened a little bit for you. Have you got more free time as a result?
No, not yet. And I think I, you know, it's interesting that you asked that because so many people, when they found out that I had sold or partnered with AMP was, oh, so what are you going to do? Just retire? And I'm like, I couldn't retire if I even tried. Like, unfortunately, I am a workaholic by just standard. That's my core. Not that I choose to work over play, because I definitely play a lot too, but you know, like we were talking about before we even got on, it's like, what would we do? It's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to just be a part of something that I can hopefully make better, whether that's better efficiency, better operations, better revenue, better culture, better anything. Like that is what I want to continue to give for the rest of my life, God willing.
How would you, How would you tell someone? Well, what would you tell someone to think about to see if they're ready for a private equity decision? Like, what are the things that would make you a really good fit to sell out to your practice to private equity versus like where you should probably not do that yet?
I would say if you're thinking that you have 2 to 5 years left in you to work, now is the time to look, because the average private equity group or, you know, will probably want you to stay on for an average of 3 to 5 years. And I didn't know that when I was going in. Not that I wanted to get out right away. I didn't want that, but I was like, oh, now's the time then. And you just have to be ready for a lot of transition and choose a company that aligns with your core values. You know, there are some private equity groups where they bring in managers and kind of take over. That's not something that I wanted. And so I'm grateful that, you know, AMP has allowed us to basically at the site level still run as DA. Like everything really is kind of the same, and patient facing, same. So I'm grateful that but that's why, you know, that's one of the reasons I picked them, because they were going to allow us to continue to operate that way. And they have stayed true to their word and in that regard. But yeah, in preparing for an acquisition, it's a lot of housekeeping. Get close to your CPA, your accountant. It's going to be literally your best friend. Save a lot of money for attorney fees. My attorney fees were extremely hefty. And work with a good broker or advisor, you know, company. I worked with SkyTail. They were amazing. I couldn't imagine doing it without them or my attorneys. So it's a lot. It's a lot. But mostly it's a lot from your heart, you know, in your mind, because losing control over what something that you built is scary. But yeah, it's been a positive change for me.
I think you and I, we see a lot when we go to meetings, and we're very in tune with the pulse of this industry. What are some things that you'd want to change about our industry? Just like showing up at a meeting and seeing all the things that we see and the trends and the way people are working. A good question, but I have to ask it because I feel like we're a driving force of energy, and I want to, you know, we can see, we have experience. We have to be a force of good.
Yeah. I see a lot of people struggling right now, and it makes me sad. Struggling with just the balance, you know, everything that we had talked about, struggling to try to be that perfect provider, business owner, person on social media, all of these things. And having done it, meaning starting from scratch, growing a business to 5 locations and selling, and now still having the opportunity, so grateful to continue to work and doing what I love to do. I'm kind of like sitting back and watching everyone else kind of go through those processes and just knowing what some of the struggles that I went through personally, professionally, mentally, emotionally, and all of those things. It's just a kind of like, I'm like looking at it from an outside in as like a mama bear. I just kind of want to wrap my arms around everybody and just tell everyone, like, you're enough. Your one location is enough. Let's make great to greater. Let's just make this alone the magic that you created. And I feel like there's so much pressure on social media just to not, without business, like just to look a certain way and to act a certain way. And it makes me sad. You know, my daughter went through her own mental health challenges, and that was another reason why I decided to sell, because she was graduating from high school. But I see the upcoming generations coming through the pipeline, growing up with social media and all of the pressures of just that alone. It's a lot. So I think just allowing people the space to know that they are enough, their practice is enough, they don't have to achieve up here, you know, all of those things. And it's like, I tell some of my staff sometimes, it's like slow and steady wins a race. You know, you don't have to go from 1 to 5 locations in 3 years, 10 years, 20 years. If that's what you want to do, great, but do it with help. Don't be the person in charge of every aspect. You know, if it's something that you don't like to do, whether it's accounting, whether it's Instagram, all of those things, like hire out for that, like protect what you are passionate about, because that's what's going to keep you as a driving force in continuing on to your destination.
I think so. I think you go to meetings and you feel propelled by the amount of all the companies and industries out there that are telling you to be more and do more and just try to get more. And really, you just need to take a step back and ask, like, what's going to make me happy? You know, you are enough, actually. Like, I opened 5 locations and I tried for a while with 2. And it was like, it's just not worth it. I don't need that anymore. It didn't make me happier. So you really ask yourself, did it make you happier to be so fancy and so like doing everything for everybody? And then at the end of the day, you're fully depleted and drained, and it does not, you have to really be conscientious with your decisions and what makes you happy. So I think that's one important thing, is to like take from all the glamour and the glitz and the sparkle at the meetings, like you have to come back home to be happy with who you are.
I couldn't have said it better. And I love your question. And in fact, answering a question with a question, that alone is so powerful. What you said, will it make you happy? Mm-hmm. It's like, will it make you happier? Will it make you happier? And that's a question that I think we need to ask people when they ask us for advice. So X, Y, and Z. It goes all along with the affective forecasting. You went from 1 to 2 and you're like, it didn't really make me happier. But when you were building it, you thought that it would maybe make you fulfill a bucket that maybe you thought needed filling, but it really didn't. It's like, you know, it's like, are you proud? Yes. All of those things, it checks off a lot of accolade buckets, but did it actually make you happier? And I think that that is such an impactful story.
Yeah, that's so important as we grow, like to take those steps back to really reflect and think, and like you decided you wanted freedom. I think that's what I want too, honestly. You want the success and you get the pot of gold, then you're like, okay, now what? Am I actually happier? Like, no, I'm happiest when I'm home with my fur babies and my real kids and like, you know, traveling, doing things, being a creator, being creative. So everyone out there needs to really sit and reflect on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and also make the decision to be happy. You have to decide to wake up and be happy every day.
Decision.
I'm going to make it a good day today. You have to actually say that to yourself. It's going to be a good day. I'm going to make it a good day. So those are kind of like some of the core things I've learned. And this just goes down to the basics of like, you know, what do you learn in early life and how to keep yourself super happy. What kind of goals do you have for the year ahead? I always ask people this year, I'm asking everybody, what's your goal this year? Like, what is your goal this year?
I think my goal this year is trying to figure out what freedom looks like for me. And I'm still on that journey. I don't know. I got to dig deep. I'm doing that. I'm trying to do the work on myself and figuring that out. You know, we became empty nesters this year. My husband and I will celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary this year.
Hey, you're not supposed to say empty nesters. That's negative. We're supposed to say free birds. We became.
Oh, I've heard that before.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. We're free birds. We're free birds. And you know, 1 year, it's been 1 year since we partnered with AMP, but just a lot of change. And I'm trying to figure that out. What defining my own personal freedom, what that looks like. That's my goal for this year.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's very valuable, I think, for young injectors and young med spa owners to hear kind of the course of how you grow, how you expand, how you really made your decisions, and love all the tips and advice. Where can people find you on the gram?
I'm at botox.girl, and that's where I'm at. And our business handle is destination_aesthetics.
And will we be going to any future meetings coming up this year?
Yes. I'm actually at a panel at CORE, which is in a couple of weeks. I'll be on a panel at LAMCA. I'll be on a panel at SCALE. And then going to just a lot of different conferences this year. But my goal actually, okay, I'm going to go back to one of my goals this year. Because I spend so much time training and educating so many people, whether it's through Allergan Medical Institute or just my own practice, I in turn this year am committed to sitting through lectures and the conferences in attendance and really taking in information this year. So I want to be that person to absorb the knowledge. Usually in conferences, I'm networking in meetings or in my hotel room, being an introvert, working. That's what we need to do too. And I don't absorb a lot of the information that is given at the conferences. And so this year I'm committed. So if you see me at a conference, I hope you see me in the audience taking notes and absorbing so I can pass that on to my team and others and just self-absorb.
It's very true. We're always on panels, so we never get to sit and hear anything. It's very
Yeah.
true.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, this has been such a great chat. Someday we have to come on over to LA and we'll do it in person.
I would love that. I would love that. So, hope to see you soon. And thank you so much for the opportunity and being a shining light in this amazing industry. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Well, that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find all of our amazing skincare line and links to all the other podcasts, which you'll really learn a lot if you start listening to podcasts. Highly recommend it. It should be one of your goals this year. That's it for
Yes.
now, guys. Stay beautiful.